Suke, spreha. Yadiva pradhane shraddha saram vakshulakaridi agre tirshrata matrame nacha gramya suke spreha. Mother, oh, you want to go? Yadiva pradhane shraddha Saram vakshulaka hridi agre tishruta matrame nacha gramya suke spriha. Mother, yadiva pradhaneshradha saram vakshulaka hridi Agre tishrata matrame nacha gramya suke spriha. Word to word, yadi, if, va, of you, pradhane, in battle, shraddha, faith, saram, patience, va, or, shulaka, O insignificant ones, Riddhi, in the core of the heart, Agre, in front, Tishtata, just stand, Matram, for a moment, Me, of me, Na, not, Chet, if, Gramyasuke, and sense gratification. Spriha, desire. Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Translation. O insignificant demigods, if you truly have faith in your heroism, if you have patience in the cores of your hearts, and if you are not ambitious for sense gratification, please stand before me for a moment. Purport, rebuking the demigods, Vitrasur challenged. O demigods, if you are actually heroes, stand before me now and try to show your prowess. If you do not wish to fight, if you are afraid of losing your lives, I shall not kill you, for unlike you, I am not so evil-minded as to kill persons who are neither heroic nor willing to fight. If you have faith in your heroism, please stand before me. So yesterday, we were hearing about how the demons were running away because they were getting dealt with, that was my language, by the demigods. And then the demigods started chasing them and killing them from behind. So Vitrasura started chastising both the demigods and the demons. He chastised the demons for running and chastised the demigods for attacking from behind. When clearly they weren't facing warriors, they were facing basically cowards. As my brother put it nicely yesterday, the essence of what Vitrasura was saying yesterday, there are no demons, there are no demigods, I'm just surrounded by cowards. That's the essence of what he was saying yesterday. And in today's verse, he is now challenging the demigods, since all his warriors, even those who were known as great warriors, they were all running. So now he's saying, okay, come. Step up to this. Of course, this is very big for Vitrasura. If you have faith in your heroism, and you're really so strong as you think you are, and you're patient, Saram, or yeah, patient, probably translated as, and you're not desirous for sense gratification, just like some cheap shot, then come and face me for a moment. Let's see what you got. So he's challenging them. Any questions? That's what this verse says in Prabhupada, more or less. Re-emphasizing. I'll just move on then if no one wants to add anything to that. So this is the next verse. There's several verses without purports actually coming up. Now we're going to hear about the fight that ensued. Shukadeva Goswami said, Vitrasura, the angry and most powerful hero, terrified the demigods with his stout and strongly built body. When he roared with a resounding voice, nearly all living entities fainted. When all the demigods heard Vitrasura's tumultuous roar, which resembled that of a lion, I guess a very big lion. They fainted and fell to the ground as if struck by thunderbolts. Wow. As the demigods closed their eyes in fear, Vritrasura, taking up his trident and making the earth tremble with his great strength, trampled the demigods beneath his feet on the battlefield the way a mad elephant tramples hollow bamboos in the forest. So he began stepping on them like cockroaches. Of course, we shouldn't step on cockroaches. I think we may have had that experience, so I'm just giving a visual. Seeing Vitrasura's disposition, Indra, the king of heaven, became intolerant and threw at him one of his great clubs, which are extremely difficult to counteract. However, as the club flew toward him, Vitrasura easily caught it with his left hand. O King Parikshit, the powerful Vitrasura, the enemy of King Indra, angrily struck the head of Indra's elephant with that club, making a tumultuous sound on the battlefield. For this heroic deed, the soldiers on both sides glorified him. Wow, that was pretty good. Even the demigods were glorifying. That would be humbling. Struck with the club by Vitrasura like a mountain struck by a thunderbolt, the elephant Airavata, feeling great pain and spitting blood from its broken mouth, which pushed back 14 yards. In great distress, the elephant fell with Indra on his back, on its back. Excuse me. When he saw Indra's carrier elephant thus fatigued and injured, and when he saw Indra morose because his carrier had been harmed in that way, the great soul Vitrasura, following religious principles, refrained from again striking Indra with the club. Taking this opportunity, Indra touched the elephant with his nectar-producing hand, thus relieving the animal's pain and curing its injuries. Then the elephant and Indra both stood silently. O King, when the great hero Vitrasura saw Indra, his enemy, the killer of his brother, standing before him with a thunderbolt in his hand, desiring to fight, Vitrasura remembered how Indra had cruelly killed his brother. Thinking of Indra's sinful activities, he became mad with lamentation and forgetfulness. Laughing sarcastically, he spoke as follows. Now Vitrasura is addressing Indra. He who has killed a Brahmana, he who has killed his spiritual master, indeed he who has killed my brother, is now by good fortune standing before me face to face as my enemy. O most abominable one, when I pierce your stone-like heart with my trident, I shall be freed from my debt to my brother. Only for the sake of living in the heavenly planets, you killed my elder brother, a self-realized, sinless, qualified Brahmana who had been appointed your chief priest. He was your spiritual master, but although you entrusted him with the performance of your sacrifice, you later mercilessly severed his head from his body, the way one butchers an animal. Indra, you are bereft of all shame, mercy, glory, and good fortune. Deprived of these good qualities by the reactions of your fruitive activities, you are to be condemned even by the man-eaters, Rakshasas. Now I shall pierce your body with my trident, and after you die with great pain, even fire will not touch you. Only the vultures will eat your body. It's like a diss. Understand? You are naturally cruel. If the other demigods, unaware of my prowess, follow you by attacking me with raised weapons, I shall sever their heads with this sharp trident. With those heads, I shall perform a sacrifice to Bhairava and the other leaders of the ghost, along with their bodies. But if in this battle you cut off my head with your thunderbolt and kill my soldiers, O Indra, O great hero, now remember he's being sarcastic, I shall take great pleasure in offering my body to other living entities, such as jackals and vultures. I shall thus be relieved of my obligations to the reactions of my karma, and my fortune will be to receive the dust from the lotus feet of great devotees, like Narada Muni. So Srila Prabhupada's purport here, Srila Narottam Das Thakur sings A Chaya Gosani Yar Mui Tarantas Tan Sabhara Pararenu Mora Pancha Gras. Quote, I am the servant of the six Goswamis, and the dust of their lotus feet provides my five kinds of food. End quote. A Vaishnava always desires the dust of the lotus feet of previous Acharyas and Vaishnavas. Vritrasura was certain that he would be killed in the battle with Indra, because this was the desire of Lord Vishnu. He was prepared for death because he knew that after his death, he was destined to return home, back to Godhead. This is a great destination, and it is achieved by the grace of a Vaishnava. Chaitya Vaishnava Seva Nistara Payeche Keba. No one has ever gone back to Godhead without being favored by a Vaishnava. In this verse, therefore, we find the words Manisvinam Pada Raja Prapastye. Quote, I shall receive the dust of the lotus feet of great devotees. End quote. The word Manisvinam refers to great devotees who always think of Krishna. They are always peaceful, thinking of Krishna, and therefore they are called Dhira. The best example of such a devotee is Narada Muni. If one receives the dust of the lotus feet of a Manasvi, a great devotee, he certainly returns home back to Godhead. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. So Vritrasura is chastising Indra in various sorts of ways. He first of all underscores the heinousness of his crime, that he's killed a self-realized person, someone who's realized Atma. So as a result of being a realizer of Atma, he was sinless. He was also a Brahmana, and he was also my brother, Vritrasura is saying. So you performed a greatly cruel act. Sometimes it is thought of that Vishwarupa was like a demon because he was favorable towards the demons. So sometimes, at least I remember also thinking like that for some time, that he was kind of like something that was a little messed up with him because he was favorable to the demons. Although Indra was not justified in his action, still it appeared that Vishwarupa, might not have been so pure. But these verses of the Bhagavatam revealed that Vishwarupa was actually pure and completely sinless, being a realizer of Atma. And he was a Brahmana. And he was also Vritrasura's brother. So he's underscored Indra's heartlessness in order to achieve Swargaloka. So he compares Indra even to a butcher. And actually, I was looking this up. A butcher, like in Vedic yagyas, they would also sacrifice animals for the purpose of attaining Swargaloka. This is the actual comparison that's being made. So just as persons do not mind sacrificing animals just for attaining some ephemeral happiness in the heavenly regions, so also for attaining some ephemeral happiness in the form of gaining back Swarga, you will perform this heinous act, this very cruel act. So he's comparing him to a butcher of animals just for achieving some insignificant result. So this is connected, this connects to a previous message we were hearing in relationship to the Dichi. The Dichi also speaking about persons, that the real religious principle is to be able to sacrifice one's body for a higher purpose. Otherwise, one's body and everything connected to that body becomes a source of misery. That was a previous message that we were hearing. And only persons who are pitied by immovable entities like trees and plants, who also render service to others, only persons pitied by such non-moving entities would not give their bodies up for a higher cause, but rather they would use their bodies to perform degraded activities just for achieving some fleeting happiness. You follow? This is a previous message. So here he's chastising Indra for being such a heartless person, who's not able to sacrifice his body for a more noble cause, but rather is prepared to perform anything wrong for achieving his sense gratification. Prabhupada actually defines demon like this in one lecture. A demon is one who's prepared to do anything wrong to satisfy his own senses. Does that sound familiar? Familiar definition? One is prepared to do anything wrong to satisfy his own senses. This is the definition of a demon. And later on, we'll hear from Srila Prabhupada in the next chapter, his commentary, where he says that Vritrasura was actually the Sura and Indra was the Asura. He will say like that. So this is a nice definition of one who's prepared to do anything wrong to satisfy his own senses. So instead of using his body to achieve eternal glory, to achieve elevation in the higher planetary systems, those were the two points that were particularly pointing out, he is rather using his body to do something very cruel and heinous for some ephemeral happiness, some short-lived happiness, fleeting happiness. You follow? So this is a Asuric mentality. Prepared to do anything wrong for some temporary happiness. Sound familiar? Yes, Asura, all the Asuras, demons. So he's after chastising him for that, in so many words, then Vritrasura says that he is prepared to give up his own body to the same vultures and jackals that he said that Indra's body was destined to receive. You follow? He was saying that after I kill you, you're so impure, you're so such a cruel person that not even the fire is going to touch your body. Only the vultures and jackals. I guess these are the creatures in like lower modes of material nature. Only they will come close to you. Not even the fire will be able to will touch your body. But then, after speaking that, he speaks of himself. I am prepared to give up my body to these same jackals and vultures. I am prepared to do so. For what reason? I shall thus be relieved of my obligations to the reactions of my karma. And then he speaks an interesting point here, the last line. Mani suinam pada raja prapatsye. And then I will be able to, and by my fortune, I will be able to receive the dust from the lotus feet of great devotees like Narada Muni. So Prabhupada's purport is focusing on this last line. To be honest with you, I don't see the 100% connection. Except that Vritrasura is now, his real consciousness is starting to be evinced. Because he appears very much like a demon. Obviously, he was stepping on the demon. That's what we just heard. He was stepping on them. So like I often mention, if you were to see, like suppose some demon just like opened up the rooftop of the temple and then just like grabbed Bhakta Michael and then ate him, threw him down, then stepped on Bhakta Jordan. I don't think you would think that maybe he's a great devotee. We should give him a chance. Please speak so we can see if you're a great devotee or not. Huh, immediately you run, you think this is a demon, you become afraid, isn't it? And so naturally with him attacking Indra, very easily also Indra, we were hearing Indra through the club, Vritrasura just caught it with his left hand. I think that's a way of saying that left hand is usually a way of saying that, because left hand, usually people are not left-handed, it's like a weaker hand. So he caught it with his left hand and said, that was nothing, you know, it's just like, I just humbled you, you know, like that. And then threw it at Airavata, Indra's elephant carrier. Airavata's face got busted up. And then both, after Indra healed him, both of them stood there morose. Because they were getting dealt with. They were getting dealt with pretty effectively. So he just felt good, became morose at that time. And so one can arguably say that Vritrasura really was a demon. It'd be very hard to convince anyone that he was nothing but a demon. And yet in this verse, he's beginning to evince his real level of contemplation. He's glorifying the Manisvinam. The word Manisvinam, Prabhupada says, it refers to devotees who always think of Krishna. And coincidentally, he is also such a Manisvinam. Therefore, he's able to recognize other such personalities and thus appreciate them. Because ultimately, without recognizing the position of a devotee, you can't appreciate them for their true contribution. You appreciate them for something less because you're on a lesser platform of realization. And ultimately, it'd be hard to appreciate them for their true contribution without coming to their level of Krishna consciousness through their instruction and so on. So he's a Manisvinam, and therefore he's able to recognize other Manisvinams, pure devotees basically, and appreciate them. And he's saying that his good fortune will be to receive the dust of such persons. So he's starting the event. Now, no demon thinks like that. No demon thinks like that. My fortune will be to receive the dust of pure devotees. You never hear demons say like that. So that's the difference between a personality like Vritrasura and a personality like Hiranyakashipu. Because we were hearing yesterday from Maharaj how Well, there was some discussion also about how a person can be understood by speech. That is Prabhupada's teaching as well. But we see that Hiranyakashipu also spoke very nicely in the seventh canto. We'll hear he speaks very nicely when his family is in lamentation. He even tells him a story about Yamaraj, and he's preaching like, if you would just read that section of verses, you're like, wow, this is a great sadhu. Wow, these are beautiful instructions. You're like, who's speaking this? I want to memorize these verses. Who's speaking this? Oh, Hiranyakashipu, you get bewildered. He also speaks very nicely. At least he speaks in terms of Atma Gyan, realization of the soul, but he never speaks of Krishna, and he never speaks of the glories of devotees. So demons can't do that. Although they may have some Gyan. Gyan is possible to have just by a little purification of the subtle body, antakarna. You understand? But when one purifies his antakarna, which is the word that is used to refer to the subtle body, then Gyan will manifest automatically. You understand? That's what we're hearing about in Bhagavad Gita chapter 2. By purifying the antakarna, the subtle body, through Nishkama Karma Yoga, then Gyan manifests itself automatically. You follow? But bhakti doesn't manifest like that. Even if you purify the antakarna, you won't get bhakti unless you have bhakta give it to you. Understand? Bhakti is completely transcendental, so it's not available in the material world. Gyan is available in the material world by purification of the subtle body, but bhakti is not. So even if you purify your antakarna through proper practices mentioned in the sacred texts, by which Gyan manifests itself, bhakti doesn't come from that. And only by bhakti can you really start to appreciate a bhakta also. You understand? Because bhakti, we mentioned this earlier on in the sixth canto, bhakti, Bhagavan, and bhakta are all in the same transcendental platform. Understand? So unless you have bhakti, you cannot see bhakta, you cannot see Bhagavan also. You have vision of Bhagavan? You're seeing Bhagavan daily? You're seeing, right? You see? Bhagavan, you're seeing daily? You don't know. You only see marble stone, isn't it? Don't worry, me too. Me too. Only marble stone, isn't it? You see Bhagavan? No. So just as you cannot see Bhagavan, even though he's right before you, before us, we cannot see. So also, we cannot see bhaktas as well, because they're on the same transcendental platform. Understand? And only it is bhakti that reveals the position of Bhagavan, and similarly, it is bhakti that reveals the position of bhakta. But how do you get that bhakti? It's also on that platform. So someone has to give it to you. Understand? And the method in which Krishna gives bhakti to the entities of this world is through bhaktas. You follow? So you have to get bhakti from bhakta. Krishna bhakti janamula hai sadhu sangha. Only by sadhu sangha you can get bhakti. So, and only by bhakti can you appreciate bhakta. Otherwise, you're speculating so many things. And even if they're positive things, you may have some positive mental speculations also, mostly negative, but sometimes you have positive speculations also. But it won't be the real appreciation of their transcendental position and their contribution. You understand? You need bhakti to give you that revelation. Understand? So, by that bhakti, he has appreciation of bhakta. So the point that I'm making is that Hiranyakashipu also speaks nicely, because you can get Gyan just by purifying the antakarna through appropriate practices. So he has some Gyan and he's speaking. Of course, he wasn't Jivan Mukta, but he had Gyan. He had Gyan. Just by a little purification of antakarna, the Gyan will come up. But bhakti will never come up like that. Therefore, you will never hear Hiranyakashipu glorifying his son, glorifying other devotees. That never happens with Hiranyakashipu. But it's happening with Vitrasura. Why? Because he has bhakti. Understand? He has bhakti, and because he has bhakti, he can appreciate bhaktas, he can appreciate Bhagavan. Because of bhakti, he has become Manisvina. Manisvina means one who is always thinking of Krishna. Understand? You are always thinking of Krishna? No. What are you thinking of right now? Not Krishna, probably, right? You're thinking of Krishna? I'm hardly thinking of Krishna. I'm giving class. So, because it's not easy to think of Krishna. Even when we chant japa, we don't think of Krishna also, isn't it? Even the name is coming. Huh? That's the only time. Yeah, the main time when we don't think of Krishna. Maybe with some suffering comes, you think of Krishna a little bit. Otherwise, japa also. I remember I shared this before many times when I was my first Mangalarti I ever attended, I got stuck up just a few blocks down on Lunch Street. And saving you the details of the story, I was chanting japa. I was chanting japa from my home in Evanston. I walked down. I was up the whole night just chanting Hare Krishna in the moonlight. It was really cool. And I said, let me go to Mangal Arati. It was my first Mangal Arati, and it was almost my last. I almost didn't make it to my first Mangal Arati. Anyway, I got stuck up on Ashland Street, just Ashland Line, just down 2 blocks. And I was chanting Maha Mantra, and he showed me his gun, and he had asked me a block earlier to put my hands up. But because I was in front of him, I thought maybe he's talking to someone else, because I already walked past him. So I just kept walking straight. I didn't turn back around. I just kept walking straight. So he was on a bicycle. He came in front of me, showed his gun, and said some words. And anyway, I'm paraphrasing. When a person says, put your hands up, that means put your hands up. And that time I was chanting Hare Krishna, actually. But my whole mind was zoom, 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 zoom. I was like, okay, my mom's going to be really mad because she told me not to hang out at night like this. My brother's gonna be sad because he likes me. My friends are gonna be sad because they like. That was all the things that were going through my head. Then I was like, oh, what about my dance career? I'm just on the verge of a breakthrough, and these are only things that were going. And I was chanting Maha Mantra, you know. But these are only things going on in my head. What my point is that without bhakti, you cannot think of Bhagavan. I remember Janaki Nath, one Brahmachari from London, very nicely. He had some severe malaria at one point, and he was in the hospital for some time. And so he said he surrounded himself with Prabhupada paraphernalia, and he had the Prabhupada japa always going this and that. He said, okay, if I die, I'm ready. If you see him, you have to see how he talks. It was really funny. He said, okay, if I die, then I'm ready. And then as it was starting to settle in, his own mortality was starting to settle in, he mentioned in an open class here in Chicago, he said, I realized that it wasn't that easy, actually. To just think of Krishna like that, even if you surround yourself with the paraphernalia of Krishna consciousness and so on. So my point is that, what's my point? Without bhakti, you would not be able to think of Krishna. You understand? It is not possible to think of. And similarly, without bhakti, just as you cannot think of Krishna without bhakti, you cannot think of bhaktas also without bhakti. You understand? You understand that point? So then Vritrasura is a bhakta. Why? Because he can appreciate bhaktas. And the only reason, way he can really appreciate them for their actual position is because he has bhakti. Understand? So what is his appreciation? That the dust of their feet can purify me. That's his realization that he's expressing here. That's an appreciation that's not easy to get, even if you have theoretical knowledge about devotional service. That the dust, which can literally mean the actual dust of their feet, literally speaking. And you will see that in India, that when sadhus come, they touch their feet, they try to get the dust of their feet. They roll around in that dust also. And it can also refer to, Vishwanathacharya Thakur speaks of it in terms of referring to their Vaishnava character, their Vaishnava behavior, their Vaishnava teachings. This famous verse is there. Naishamatis tava urukramangram, sparsharti anartha apakamoya artha, mahiyasham, padarajo abhishekam, niskinchananam navrinita. Hiranyakashipu asked Prahlad Maharaj, how do you become so Krishna conscious? But he asked it in a mean way. But that was a good question. But he asked it in a mean way. And Prahlad Maharaj gave some preliminary statements, and then he made this statement, which I just quoted, that unless your mati, your consciousness, your intelligence, bathes in the dust of the lotus feet of a pure devotee, Niskinchananam, one who has no material attachments to this world of matter, because of being charmed by Krishna. Because of being charmed by Krishna, nothing in this material world can charm him. Unless you bathe your intellect and your consciousness in his Vaishnava character, behavior, his teachings, that's how Vishwanathacharya Thakur speaks of it in that verse, then there can be no removal of your anarthas. Anartha apakamo means the removal of anarthas. You understand? You have anarthas? You have anarthas, everyone? Anarthas? No anarthas, no. We need his dust then, his foot dust. He has no anarthas. You have anarthas? Those anarthas will never go away unless, they'll never go away unless, there's only one way they will go away. You have to get the dust of the feet of pure devotee, of the Lord. Niskinchananam navrinita yatva. Without that, navrinita, if you don't get that, then your anarthas will never go away. That's what the verse is saying. In other words, Prahlad Maharaj is telling his father, and I got the dust of the pure devotee, his teachings, his character, his behavior. So my anarthas have gone away and I become Krishna conscious. As for you, you will never become Krishna conscious. Not by your own efforts you will become. He says in previous verse, Materna Krishna Paratasvatova, isn't it? Mito Abhipadyeta Grihavratanam. Persons like you are Grihavratanam. Grihavratanam means determined to enjoy sense gratification. Determined. Vrata. I made a vrata that I'll be happy in this material world. Prabhupada described it like that in one lecture I heard. Grihavratanam means one who's made a rut, vow, to be happy in this material world, to make this material world my home. Isn't it? Any Grihavratanam, sir? Yeah, all of us like that only. Normally think material householder, but Prabhupada brought in the playing field a little bit and said anyone who's trying to be happy in this material world. There's such persons trying to be happy in this material world by gaining position, prestige, money, women, men, like that. You're trying to be like that. Then by your own efforts, you will not become devoted. That's not possible. And by the efforts of others, also, you will not become devoted. Means if they are not devotees, they not help you become. Even if they have some basic knowledge, they not help you become Krishna conscious. Neither of you all get together and figure out, okay, how are we going to do? How are we going to really become Krishna conscious? You will not become Krishna conscious. Understand? Even if you get the help of others, and you also put your mind together and their minds together, okay, how are we going to become Krishna conscious? It will not happen. You can have meeting though. That's okay. Meetings will be going on. They go on forever. Time eternal, ad infinitum. You have many meanings, but you will not become Krishna conscious. How do you become Krishna conscious? What is the answer? Manoj. You need the dust of pure devotee of the Lord. Otherwise, you will not become Krishna conscious. So then, Prabhupada says here in the purport, expanding on this point. Oh, where did I put it? Where did it go? How did I get so many pages over like that? Oh, okay. So Prabhupada says here, a Vaishnava always desires the dust of the lotus feet of previous acharyas and Vaishnavas. Just what it means to be Vaishnava. You're always looking for that dust. Why are you looking for that dust? Why are you looking for the dust? Why are you looking for the dust, Jordan? To become Krishna conscious. And then after you become Krishna conscious, why would you look for that dust? Yes. To stay Krishna conscious, you understand? Otherwise, you not stay Krishna conscious. Senses are formidable opponents. That's what we've been hearing about in chapter 2 of Bhagavad Gita. How Krishna just speaks of self-realization as a person being able to control his senses. That's how he speaks of self-realization, which I think is really, it's like really simple but profound. It just goes to show you how much the senses are an obstacle. So to become really Krishna conscious, you need dust. And to stay Krishna conscious, you need dust. Understand? Got it? So Vaishnava is one who's always looking for that dust. He never thinks, oh, I am Vaishnava now. Now I don't need anyone because I am situated in pure devotion to the Lord. He is one who's always thinking that I need the dust. Why I'm telling others to get the dust, I need the dust myself. Understand? Just like Prabhupada tells the story of, he gave a class that a pure devotee never falls into Maya. And then afterwards, one devotee sees Prabhupada praying to the deities, may he never fall into Maya. And then the devotee asks Prabhupada, you just said in the class, pure devotee never falls into Maya. He said, now you know why. Because I'm always praying to the Supreme Lord, I don't fall into Maya. In other words, out of Vaishnava humility, it's not that they're so confident in the sense that they're thinking I'm independent source of power. My power is coming from Supreme Lord. And that power of the Supreme Lord is coming through Vaishnavas. So he thinks in this way. So he becomes Krishna conscious by getting in dust. He remains Krishna conscious by getting in dust. Only if you get the dust of a Vaishnava can you get the special mercy of the Lord. Otherwise, you will be without any good fortune. Even if you get a little purified and you have some understanding, you are bereft of good fortune unless you get the dust. Of Vaishnava. So this story is there. You'll be knowing. Okay, Ravtak wants to say something. I guess my class is more or less over. We're just expanding. But I'm going to go on a little bit longer. I have to share these nice things.
Hare Krishna. Hare. If you get the dust of a pure Vaishnava, you get this mercy. Would taking like the chewed remnants of a pure devotee, does that compare?
Yes, that was the next section that I was going to read to you. So let's hear about that right now.
Okay, thank you.
From Chaitanya Charitamrita Arilila, this story of Kalidas. Kalidas was, he's one of my favorite devotees to hear about because he was just so weird. Externally speaking, I'm very unconventional and hard to understand. Kalidas, in the CC, chapter 16, it describes in the beginning he used to roll dice, you know, gambling basically. Yeah. Ish. He would never lose his Krishna consciousness. And there was a reason for that also. We said, oh, I want to follow the example of Kalidas. So Srila Prabhupada, of course, gives a nice purport for that verse particularly. You want to follow his example. That not happen to you. You would say, Hare Krishna, and Hare Krishna. Then what the... Your consciousness will go down. You're not staying in Krishna consciousness. It's not possible. But he was so Krishna conscious that he was even doing unconventional things. As you see, many examples of devotees in the Shastras doing very unconventional things and still being on the topmost platform, very comparable to Vitrasura in this case. So in this pastime, Kalidas was very much attached to the remnants of Vaishnavas in their foot dust. So much so that he used to go around and take the remnants of the devotees and their foot dust by force. He would take by force. By force means that he would first ask for it politely. Please, can I have your remnants and your foot dust? What if Vaishnava will say yes? He says yes, take it. Oh, you are not a Vaishnava. No, Vaishnava would say like that as such, generally speaking. In normal Vaishnava interaction, the relationship between Acharya and disciple is different, but no Vaishnava would say yes. No one would agree to such a proposition. So Kalidas would say, oh, okay, no problem. So then he would just go in some corner and hide and watch while they were eating, you know. And then he would see where they would throw out their remnants. And then when they would walk off, he would go and take it. And similarly, when the devotees were walking in the dust, he would just watch them from some distant place. And then when they would walk out, he would go do somersault and get the dust of the Vaishnavas. He was so attached to the dust of the Vaishnavas. So in the pastime, he goes to one, Jadu Thakur. And Jadu Thakur, he's asking for the remnants. Same story. And then he says, how can you ask? I'm just a low-born Shudra. How can you ask me for remnants? I'm not even a Vaishnava. And then they have some Shastric exchange about even how a Shudra can be a topmost Vaishnava. So and they quote some Kalidas quotes some very beautiful verses from the Bhagavatam. And then Jadu Thakur said, these verses are very true, but they do not apply to me. So therefore, you cannot have these remnants. So Kalidas was like, okay, no problem. Then he came and bought Jadu Thakur some mango. This mango is for you and for your wife. Oh, thank you very much. Thank you very much. So then Jadu Thakur sat down with his wife. She served him the mango. And then after he took, she also took. Then they threw it in some refuse place. And then after they were walking off a little bit, Jadu Thakur went and grabbed that and just was, you know, where he's like sucking the seed, you know, trying to get the nectar. And later on, he was rolling the dust also. In this way, he has so much faith in the position of Vaishnava. Manisvina, that's what we're hearing, the verse for Manisvina, great-minded person. So much so was his faith in the Vaishnavas. It is described that later on, when he went to the temple, Jagannath Puri temple, Lord Chaitanya, before going to the temple, there was one place where he would bathe, wash his feet. And Swarup Damodar and Ramananda Roy used to stand guard so that no one would take that water. Because everyone would want that water. Lord Chaitanya, everyone wanted that water. That was like B water? D water? What's that? Oh, D water. Okay. Like some special organic water. This is the stupid thing that's going on today. Anyway, so it was a special water was there. No one could take that water. So then Kalidas shows up one day, and Lord Chaitanya just bathed his feet, and Kalidas, 2, 3. Then after the fourth one, Lord Chaitanya said, enough. I fulfilled your desires as much as I can. And then Kaviraj Goswami gives a comment there that's very beautiful. He says, because of his profound faith in Vaishnavas, he received mercy that no one else could receive. That is a verse Kaviraj Goswami goes on. And then he goes on to say that later on, Because of knowing Kalidasa's attachment to the remnants of Vaishnavas and their feet, Lord Chaitanya made an arrangement for him to get all of his remnants. And Govinda, he just made like a gesture to Govinda. Govinda was his servant and also godbrother. And Govinda could understand the gestures of Mahaprabhu. So he went and delivered all the remnants of Mahaprabhu to Kalidas. And, of course, Kalidas became very ecstatic. So then I'm going to read a few verses here just describing the situation. It's very beautiful. Taking the remnants of the food of Vaishnavas is so valuable that indeed it induced Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to offer Kalidas his supreme mercy. Supreme mercy. Therefore, giving up hatred and hesitation. Hatred and hesitation. You may not think you have any hate, but the hesitation one is, especially like Srila Bhakti Siddhanta, he would eat, what is that one called? It's like a long string, and you can only eat the inner part, but you can't eat the shell. Yeah, drumsticks. Srila Bhakti Siddhanta, he would eat these drumsticks, and then leave it, the remnants there. And then it looks kind of like, it looks a little rough. So he would put that on one side, and put on the other side like some nice looking prasadam, sweets or something probably. Maybe not sweets, but something else. And then he would give it to the devotee who would go around and distribute it to the devotees. And it's described like this at least in the Bhaktisiddhanta Pai Baba book. He wanted to see who had more devotion. That's the way it was described. Who took the drumsticks and who took the nice looking sort of prasadam. And so, because you can imagine looking at you. If someone hands you that type of remnant, you just give me a little, just little like this, You would not want to take a whole amount of that. So therefore, giving up hatred and hesitation, I was just saying hesitation, try to eat the remnants of the food of Vaishnavas, for you will thus be able to achieve your desired goal of life. Nija Vanchita. Desired goal of life is supposed to be prema. If you're a real sadhaka. The remnants of food offered to Lord Krishna are called Mahaprasad. You all know that, right? After this same Mahaprasadam has been taken by a devotee, the remnants are elevated to Mahaprasadam. They become elevated to Mahaprasadam. It's more special than Mahaprasadam. This is Krishna's estimation of his devotee, you understand? The dust of the feet of a devotee, your question. The dust of the feet of a devotee, the water that has washed the feet of a devotee, and the remnants of food left by a devotee are three very powerful substances. Tina Mahapala. What is their power? By rendering service to these three, one attains the supreme goal of ecstatic love for Krishna, prema. In all the revealed scriptures, this is loudly declared again and again. Therefore, my dear devotees, please hear from me, for I insist again and again, please keep faith in these three and render service to them without hesitation. Understand? A nice little sweet section. As a more, just a, you can say principle, this is the Supreme Lord's estimation of his devotee. We hear this verse, Aradhananam Sarvesham Vishnur, Aradhanam Param, Tasmat Param Taram Devi Tadiyanam Samarchanam. This is a verse that's usually quoted to describe the position of a Vaishnava, used by acharyas a lot in this particular way. That out of all the forms of worship mentioned in the Vedas, then the worship of the Vishnu is topmost. Understand? This is Shiva speaking to his wife Parvati. But higher than the worship of Vishnu is worship of Vaishnavas of Vishnu. Understand? Krishna says those who say they are my devotees, bluff. They are not my devotees. That's a bluff. But those who say they are devoted to my devotees, those are my real devotees. Those who are actually devoted, not just say, but they are devoted to my devotees. Those are my real devotees. Lord, Krishna says like this to Arjuna in the Adi Purana. So such is the position of pure devotees of the Lord. It is a practical thing to be a servant of the devotee. It's not just in your head. The unfortunate situation in the Kali Yuga is that nowadays people really have no faith that there are Vaishnavas. That's the unfortunate calamity of the modern day of Kali Yuga. And therefore, because they have no faith that there are actually any Vaishnavas, they claim to take shelter of the previous Acharyas. They don't want to practically take shelter of any Vaishnava, take their mercy, take their foot dust. They only say that the previous Acharyas, they are Vaishnavas. But how you will render service with them? Then they say anything they think in their mind, they say is service to Vaishnava. It is not like that. Anything you think in your mind and call it as service, give it misnomer, misname it as service, then you say it is service too. It is not like that. Rendering service, of course, to the previous Acharyas, but it's a very practical thing. You have to get the mercy of Vaishnava practically, means in his body. He also has body also. He connects you to that ocean of mercy of the Parampara and Guru. So much is the situation that now Vaishnavas in the modern day, they don't even think they need Gurus anymore. They don't even take Gurus anymore. They think like that. Not knowing that such thinking is Namaparad. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur specifically says this. We read it already. 6th Canto, Chapter 2, Verse 9, 10. He gives a 14-page purport. To think that I will not accept Guru is the third and fourth offense to the Holy Name. You know third offense to the Holy Name? Why you disobey the orders of the spiritual master? Offense comes up. So that's how Śrīla Bhaktisiddhānta said, that's the worst offense you can commit. That's the worst nāma-apārāda you can commit. And the fourth offense is what? Yeah, blasphemy of Vedic literature. So all the Vedic literatures, all of them, Sakshat Dari Twaina, Samasta Shastra, isn't it? We're singing every morning. All the Vedic literature is saying like this, that one needs spiritual master, and one thinks I will not take spiritual master. So Vishwanath Chakravarti said, this is nāma-apārāda. And he said, for that nāma-apārāda, you will not get Krishna consciousness. You will not chant the holy name properly because the nāma-apārāda is going on. But this is calamity of Kali Yuga. No one has any faith in any Vaishnavas anymore. There are no Vaishnavas. Only I am Vaishnava. They think in this way. They won't say that. They may not always articulate it in that way externally. But this is a feeling in the heart. I am Vaishnava. No one else is Vaishnava. Therefore, they can criticize Vaishnavas freely without feeling any remorse. They like that because they are Vaishnava. Only they can judge. No one else can be judged. Understand? Such mentality, you'll never get Krishna consciousness. You'll never attain Krishna. You'll never get Krishna. Not by your own effort, by efforts of others, by combined forces. You put your stuff together and look in all the books. Oh, I'll find Krishna consciousness in the books. You'll not find it. You only find the Nartas. Every line you study will be adding to your storage of anartas. Understand? If you try to approach the Bhagavatam Shastras, but you have no bhakti because you have not gotten mercy of bhakta, then every line you read will increase your anartas. Yes, all our acharyas speak like this. Every line. Therefore, most of us think like, I don't need sadhu. I will just read the books. We're thinking this way. I don't need practical mercy of sadhu. Prabhupada has given everything in his books. Every line will increase your anartha. You become more and more full of pride and bewilderment, illusion. Every line you read. Understand? If you don't get the mercy of Vaishnava, that's why Prabhupada's quoting this for Chaidya Vaishnava Seva Nistara Payecha Keva. Did you get mercy of Vaishnava? Then no Krishna consciousness for you. Not this life, at least. So Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur points out that persons who are sincere and they don't get the mercy of Guru this life, then they will take birth in the next life and get Diksha Guru. That's how he speaks of it. So that they can perfect their goal of their life. That's if they're sincere. The rest of them will probably have to take birth like cats and dogs because of their endless offenses. Understand? So Vaishnava is one who can appreciate Vaishnavas because he's gotten the mercy of Vaishnava. And only such persons can go back home, back to Godhead. So that's the other point Prabhupada says in the purport. By the mercy of Vaishnava, you become favored to go back home, back to Godhead. Otherwise, you're not go. Krishna will take estimation. Have you received the mercy of Vaishnava? Oh, in my head I was receiving mercy of Vaishnava. Krishna, no, not in your head. Practically, did you get mercy of Vaishnava? Well, I cannot remember. And Krishna says, I also cannot remember. Go back. Try again. You're not coming back to God. Not like that. You need practical mercy of the devotees. So a devotee is one who always feels that in his heart, that I need the mercy of devotees. I will not survive. This material world is rough. It is very wretched place. It's for wretched souls, I should say, rather. Not a wretched place exactly, but it's for wretched souls who have too high estimation of their own proficiency. So Vaishnavas mean one who's given up his confidence as such in his own proficiency. I need the mercy. So he's like Kalidas, he's always looking for the mercy, begging. And because of such faith in Vaishnavas, you can get Krishna. And you have no faith in Vaishnavas, then you're not good Krishna. It's simple philosophy to hear, but to apply is very challenging because our minds are rascals. We will look and see, oh, there's no Vaishnava here. Where is the Vaishnava? I'm not seeing even one Vaishnava I'm not seeing. All right, Baba, because you're not Vaishnava also. Where you don't see any Vaishnava. So this is Vitrasura is evincing his devotional consciousness by glorifying Vaishnava. Like I said, only if you have bhakti, you can see a Vaishnava and appreciate them for their real contribution. So normally I don't discuss so long, but I was reading some nice things here. It was nice. Any questions or comments? Yeah, Justin. Oh, yeah. Prasad is supposed to be offered that in like 3 minutes and nothing's on the altar. No, okay. Yeah, just.
So when you're talking about getting the mercy, the dust, the lotus feet of Vaishnavs, that can apply to any Vaishnav, even if their adhikar is lower than yours, or is it specifically like...
Well, the verse... More,
does it matter?
The verse says Niskinchananam. Niskinchananam refers to a devotee who has no attachment to this material world. As I described it, because he's charmed by Krishna, nothing in this world can charm him. Neither money, neither women, neither followers, Kavitam, neither liberation, prestige, none of these things can charm him anymore. That type of Vaishnavas, that type of connection is the most powerful. So Jiva Goswami speaks of it like in the Bhakti Sandarbha, he speaks of it that according to the Krishna consciousness, I'll use that language, according to the Krishna consciousness of the sadhu, then that will determine the level of consciousness they can distribute to you. Two, second verse, Mahat Sevam Dwara Mahur Vimuktis. Then the second, are the doors of liberation open? And the Tamodwaram, the door to hell, is wide open for those who are attached to, you know, women and men attached to women and so on. The impersonalists, or referring to the personalists. That particular verse is referred to the impersonalists. The second half of the verse, he uses to refer to the impersonalists. And then the next verse, he uses those situated in Sat. Then that will determine the awareness they can inculcate, distribute to those persons. So the answer to your question is that, does it just refer, in the high, and it's, I feel like my sense of it is its actual statement is refers to those level of devotees. We will take help from wherever we can get it. You understand? We are drowning. If you are drowning and someone, you cannot help it. For Sadhaka general, he would take help from wherever he could, not perhaps an aspect of his Vaishnava humility. At the same time, his deepest faith will be some particular individual. And if he's fortunate, deepest faith will go to that type of individual. And in a more general sense, he was purification, intelligence, persons like that. Any other?
Room, someplace, was up 3 floors. And every day his Mahaprasadam plate would come, come down, or after Prabhupada had eaten, for the plate to come down to be washed, to get remnants of Prabhupada. Flocking around that plate. So one Srila Prabhupada, oh yes, Srila Prabhupada, they love Mahaprasadam. And everybody knew, because this is the time Prabhupada's plate would be come, they'd be waiting. It was by the clock. So one day Prabhupada told the devotee, mix it all up. You know, sweets and the same. He said, mix it all. The devotee heard it, mix it all up means squish it all up. So he took the rice and the dals and the rasgullas and the whole thing and squished it into such a fine mash, almost like. And that day it's described, he said, I don't want this.
Hesitation.
It was like too much. I don't want this. I don't want this. So it took, it looked, memories. There were two young, the glories of the dust of the lotus feet of a pure devotee. His room was outside the temple room. You go up a flight of stairs. Oh, right at this base of the stairs, sorry. So these two devotees, and he said to his buddy, I know where these shoes came from. So here's our plan. When Prabhupada leaves his shoes there and he goes up, we'll exchange. Because they're new shoes, you know. They can't, Prabhupada can't tell. Prabhupada left his shoes, went up the stairs, they made the switch. And then Prabhupada came down later, wore his shoes, went out for a walk, came back, left his shoes and went up. They're like, ah. Minutes later, Prabhupada's servant said, next time, don't mess
with my shoe. Yeah, I think there's another story. I said Luke and then Himanshu. They washed Prabhupada's feet and they stole they were number they could wash the feet of Srila Prabhupada's room and lock the door. And the devotees were like trying to bust through and get to, and they, he says that he and one of the devotees, they just drank the whole, he said it was a big thing of water. They just drank the whole thing. And then opened the door and told the devotees, sorry. Yeah, the orange pills. Yeah, these are all little sweet stories. Yeah, Luke has.
Thank you, Prabhu, for the nice discussion. This is a follow-up question from Bhakta Justin's question. Mm-hmm. Most mature vision of the servant of the servant. So then he'll be inclined to, you know, submit himself for service or see himself as the servant of even the most beginner of devotees because he considers himself so insignificant and not very spiritually evolved. How are we to attain to that platform to carefully discriminate, see how to apply this of the Niskinat? And then at what point will we ever alter our practice? Will we ever alter our point where we're able to perceive the glory? Because I mean, in the verse that you mentioned, the Mahat Seva verse, if Prabhupada's saying you can serve even to have some fraction of devotion, duration.
Yeah, you would have to define me. Usually like in Nectar Instruction Text 5, we hear about discriminating between different levels of Vaishnavas there. But that verse, as I often point out, do so without falling to the ever criticism, shallow criticisms, a lot of maturity. Otherwise, you're in trouble. So it's naturally be placed, in fact, in persons we think are Niskanchananam, somehow that we've gotten that faith, and our deepest faith will be placed in them. And in terms of bathing ourselves in purity, etc., especially in the neophyte stage, that I need to get help from wherever I can get it. So he said, person or persons that he has his deepest faith. I think it begins with chapter 7, where we're hearing about the 24 gurus. He has 24 gurus. At the end of that section, which I think comes in chapter 9, the last few verses, it is being described how in the lady would tease it in relationship to that primary source of faith that he had. Everything else around him is reinforcing that particular source. So our deepest faith naturally goes to persons we would have that confidence in, our confidence in their state of purity. We can get it. So all vision of what I've heard, giving me new insight. And then when does he alter his vision and so on? It's just like in chapter 2 Bhagavad Gita, where the question speaks about the person becoming self-realized, Jivan Mukta. That happened. Or how does a person know when that happens and when it's time, you know, he's in that state? But you'll know that it happens when yadate moha kalilam, when the vyasti bhudera, intelligence is no longer charmed by this material world. That's the language I like to use. In other words, an intelligence fixed, but the world around you still charms you. That he's actually attained, all of a sudden. When will that happen? Whenever it happens. So in a similar, I often get a sense that it's not whenever, at which time, a spiritual guru, whoever it may be, he would also gain clarity about that, that I'm feeling in this way now. This is my means more mass affectionate Vaishnavas. Jatiya Ashaya is always a justice practices. High stage of practice, so he's already have a lot of insight. And then he has the mercy of Vaishnava, good fortune. Then he gains the clarity he requires for attaining the final beatitude. And that way, there shouldn't be much obstacle. And it's obviously, of course, a challenge for the vast majority of conditions. So, because time is a little tight. I'm still thinking about yoga, unfortunately. But you can ask after that, so we can just... But
I can see from my own experience. And then also I see that there are certain anarthas, certain shortcomings, certain realizations that either, you know, I'm not able to go beyond, some more mercy that's required. And it, based on your discussion, Maharaj was going into the forest, and by good fortune, Narada Muni kind of stopped him and gave him something that lives so many devotees. So it'll be as, you know, sincere mercy comes. And if it doesn't, yeah. Then...
And we do have the teachings. We do have our services in the discussion. But that refers to our approach towards the Bhagavatam. When one's not holy name, and the effect will be minimum because of that mentality. But then if one is dependent upon Vaishnava's mercy, then he approaches those same for the purification, he gains greater fortune. Through the...
Sorry. Anyways.
And one who becomes a servant of the servant of the servant, such a person will automatically... So, yeah.
What you're saying, put attraction to the material energy.
No, I'm saying these are extensions of that same dust. That's what I'm saying. So it's not just going to give me the final beatitude. Just like you have to bathe every daily program bathe. So it's not that one day I feel my we're increasing our good.
It's a matter of us daily engaging with that and you know.
Determine the progress of the end of final something, then we'll end because the RT is about to begin. Who was sitting next to you?
Cool.
Okay, yeah.
You mentioned the fifth verse of the Nectar of Instruction.
Yeah.
I was wondering if you would say,
maybe, arguably.
The one I would assume, like you were saying, then right. He comes.
Right.
And then...
So, yeah, Shami really presents 11. The progression. But the first three deals with the process of surrendering Sharanagati. And then verses 4 and 5, crucial to our elevation. And so I for a successful program. And then verse 7 speaks of Vaidhi Bhakti. Verse 8 speaks of Nagati. You need to surrender, otherwise no go. You need Vaishnava Sangha. And these are the various elements that are going to be at play in your exchanges. At a certain level of maturity, there's going to be discrimination. But watch out for this one. You know, if you look, go down. So these are various elements that are at play in your Vaishnava exchanges. And here's Vaidhi Bhakti. Here's kind of the flow of the Nectar instruction, as I so how each verse is exactly next of verses are presenting that progression. So those 4, 5, and 6 are presenting various elements of Vaishnava exchanges that make it successful. You have to discriminate appropriately. Some devotees are into sense gratification, but they're devotees. They like to chant, but they're in the sense for it. You are going to judge externally. You're going to make opera. You're going to go down. So these are the elements at play. So, you know, Krishna conscious cultivation is very dynamic in certain ways like that. That's how I understand the progression there. Okay, so thank you all for Prabhupada Ki Jai. I don't know. So I thought maybe this looks nice too, though. You don't like that color?
No, I like the color. It's worn out. It is being made. I had asked for a completely new different seat and table. It's being made with a color.
Okay, can you help me push this?